It seems fitting to remember this story today on this weekend, celebrated in cultures around the world as Samhain, as All Souls and All Saints Day, as Días de los Muertos, a time when it is said that that veil between the living and the dead is thin and sometimes even lifted. Inspired, at least here in the Northern Hemisphere, by the natural world where summer's greenery and harvests give way to autumn's dying plants and falling leaves, this is a threshold time. A time between life's cycles, halfway between the autumn equinox and the winter solstice. It is a passage from the seasons of planting and harvesting into the fallow term of winter. And not coincidentally, the old celebrations of autumn's turning cycles often also served as a reminder of the cycle of life and death always turning in the human family as well. In many cultures, these ancient autumn rituals included remembrances of the dead, often inviting their return with food and drink, with music and warming fires, bringing not just an invitation for the living to grieve, but even more so, an invitation to celebrate the continuing presence of the dead among the living. As one writer put it so beautifully, describing the 8th and 9th century Christians, he said, generally speaking, the dead then were not regarded as separate from the living. They belonged to the same unbroken family. In the days of the dead that Kim described with the children moments ago, this continuity of kinship across the threshold of death is still celebrated joyfully today by Mexicans and Mexican Americans and a growing number of others too, who with differing beliefs and with about what follows death, participate in this annual ritual of remembrance as a way to stay connected to loved ones who have died. Many of these rituals are based on Mexican Indian traditions that are over 2,000 years old. And they are celebrated by constructing much more elaborate versions of the ofrenda we have here today. They will create an altar of remembrance that is often built in three tiers, entirely covered with marigolds, and then supplemented with food that might have been prepared over weeks ahead of time, with the favorite drinks of the dead, with mementos and photos, and all kinds of remembrances, as well as small sugar skulls made by bakeries, and often colorful cutout paper skeletons and small skeleton figures that are dancing or playing music and doing all kinds of lively, joyful things. Often in Mexico and other Latino countries, the celebrants will also keep an all-night vigil at the graves of their loved ones, bringing their own picnics, but spreading out an especially elaborate feast that is not to be touched by the living, but is offered to the dead. As my friend and colleague Juanita Garcia Godoy once put it, Días de los Muertos is a great family reunion that especially honors the ones with no bodies. It provides, she said, a kind of solidarity across a longer arc of time for a people facing tremendous forces of disintegration. Admittedly, some who are new to the observance of the days of the dead may shy away from it. To see a true ofrenda with its bold colors and its playful skeletons and the incredible spread of food and drink laid out not for the living but for the dead can bring a bit of culture shock to those of us inclined to confine our encounters with the dead to the meaningful and beautiful but often more staid memorial services, and to the framed photos on our walls at home. I admit that the first time that Juanita presented me with a sugar skull with my own name on it, I was a bit appalled. And then I learned that it was indeed an act of friendship, and I was honored. I would guess, if we're honest with each other today, that more than a few of you might have had your doubts about coming to this service, if for no other reason than fearing it might have been too grief-stricken or too depressing, or perhaps too superstitious. But our UUA president, Peter Morales, has suggested that we might think twice about these reservations. He said, if we dismiss the Day of the Dead as pure superstition, we can easily miss the profound spiritual and psychological insight that makes this tradition powerful. A Mexican boy spending the night at his uncle's grave has a connection across time with his forebears that our children do not. While we dwellers in a technological age are connected to the World Wide Web, to cellular phones, cable TV, voicemail, and call waiting, he said, we have cut ourselves off from the web of time. Traditional cultures with their mediums and ghosts and reincarnations have understood intuitively something that we often repress. The dead don't die, they live on. End quote. When, other than today, have you recently honored your connection to this web of time? When and how have you recently welcomed the dead that you have known to live on with you? We have gathered here today in our own Unitarian Universalist family to do just that. Remembering with each tenderly placed memento on this ofrenda, with each candle flickering on the table before us, and with each soft whispering or silent recall of the names of our loved ones who have died, we are remembering and honoring the connections that run through each of our lives, holding us all in an interdependent web of all existence, threaded as we all are together across time as well as place, sometimes with the thinnest, most invisible gossamer thread, joining the near and the far, the living and the dead, joining life itself with death in a circle and cycle so much older, so much larger, so much more resilient than any of us individually can be. This is extremely healing practice of remembrance, but it is not always an easy thing to do. Like so many healing and much needed practices today, it can be a bit countercultural. For we are a forward-leaning people, living in a time of rapid change that teaches us not to dwell on or in the past. We are more inclined to experience loss under a cloak of amnesia, with our sights firmly set on where we are going, rather than giving both sides of our loss our full attention. And with this focus on moving on, we fail to remember forward. We fail to bring our dead and our dying with us as we go. We fail to acknowledge that they will live on in one way or another. And so we forget to learn from them and from our grief what we will need to know in the days and years to come. Despite this brief window of time that our employers and our whole culture often allows for mourning, we know that the loss of a loved one is always a significant turning point in our lives. Whether it is the anticipated death of an elder who has lived a long, full life, or the loss of those younger who die before their time, or whether it is a loved one we cannot imagine going on without, or the death of those with whom, frankly, we've had relationships that are difficult or complicated. In each of these different losses, we can find ourselves reeling, alternating between a need for companions and for solitude, for tears and for numbness, for remembering and for letting go. And perhaps most of all, on this roller coaster of mourning, we might be surprised by its sheer duration, as it sometimes takes years to fully cross a threshold of loss. Even when we finally do regain our footing on the other side of a significant loss, each time we experience a new grief, and it might not even be loss from a death. It can be loss of a job, of our health, of our home, of a relationship. Each of these can reawaken our old grief. And before we know it, the door is flung wide open to all the losses we have experienced before. Why? Why does grief persist so fiercely? Why, for all our efforts to put it behind us, to insist that we can move on, or we already have, unchanged, gone back to normal, why does it leave its mark so indelibly in our hearts, returning so often unbidden, or perhaps especially returning when we don't have annual rituals to welcome the dead? And why, when our grief might be unfinished or unprocessed, does it reside so stubbornly and physically, as it will, in our bodies, causing any number of symptoms or pain, carrying on within us on a real and cellular level? Perhaps one answer is that grief, and in a larger way, loss itself, has much to teach us. For when we stop insisting that it leave us alone, that we can and will return to where we were before, that we will not give in to sorrow but will shore ourselves up emotionally and move on, when we let go of all these illusions of control and let our grief come, it will change us, and in some remarkably beautiful and blessed ways. Psychotherapist and writer Miriam Greenspan says the gift that grief offers us is the capacity to see more deeply into the way things are. Life is limited, she says. We are here for a short time. Grief asks us to know this, not only in a disembodied cerebral way, but in the marrow of our bones, to look into the reality of death and loss without our usual egoic blinders on. Or I would add, without numbing ourselves in one way or another. These are gifts, Greenspan says, that come from, quote, looking into the face of death, not from turning away. It is, I think, significant to note that Greenspan writes this wisdom not just from her expertise as a therapist, but informed deeply by her own experience suffering the loss of a newborn. Yes, grief might be one of the hardest human experiences we have, and the most universal, and perhaps the most transformative. For when we look into the face of death without turning away, whether it is our own death or that of our loved ones, we will find ourselves radically decentered. Our egos will be dislodged, disoriented. It is unsettling and uncomfortable at best, and potentially terrifying at worst. But if we let grief have its way with us, we can eventually find ourselves recentered and reoriented in a larger circle of relationship. In solidarity with that longer arc of time beginning well before us and continuing long after, we can be reclaimed by that larger family of all being. When we look at it this way, grief becomes not something to avoid, to deny, to work through as quickly as we can. Rather, it is revealed to be the transformative work of love, of relationship, of kinship across time that is one of our greatest human gifts. It is not surprising, then, that grief can connect us not only to those who have gone before us, but also to those who will come after. And in the way that all of these connections are interwoven forwards and backwards across time, in the loving care we give one another, whether we are parent or child, whether we are related by blood or by friendship, by any means. In Connie's beautiful story about the medicine bag she made for her son, Aaron, she stocked it so wisely with remembrances of her parents who had died long before. And she invited the healing power of remembering forward. Surely, this is a medicine we can all use, not only for our personal healing, but for healing the web of life that connects us all. I think this is what the poet perhaps means when she describes the man crossing the rainy street with the world's most sensitive cargo, his sleeping son in his arms. His ear fills up with breathing. He hears the hum of a boy's dream deep inside him. We're not going to be able to live in this world, Naomi Shiabnai says, if we're not willing to do what he's doing with one another. Are you willing? With hearts open to those who have died, are we able to keep them open to ourselves, to our loved ones of all ages, living and dead, and to the many others who will come after us? To open our ears to their breathing, to carry the world's most sensitive cargo, the dreams of those who will come after us, in the small circle of our arms and in the larger circle of caring communities like this one. This is the powerful medicine of remembering forward. My mother died almost 5 years ago after living with ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease, for 3 years of debilitating decline. I remember when, as her strength began to wane, the first time I helped her to shower. Unable to stand and use her arms by then, she talked me through her shampooing and her bathing. It was challenging and tender, awkward and intimate all at once, periodically bringing both of us to tears and to laughter. And then, as I held her up against my body and toweled her dry, our eyes met, and a long-lost memory flooded through me as my whole body remembered her bathing and toweling me dry as an infant. And in that instant's reversal, it was as if every cell in my body recalled where it had come from and the care she had given it. Once awakened, it was a memory that stirred a whole new awareness in me of the connection we shared, and still in a way, share today, even 5 years past since her passing. Remember your birth, writes the poet Joy Harjo. How your mother struggled to give you form and breath. You are evidence of her life and her mother's and hers. Remember your father, he is your life also. We are told to remember even more. The true work of remembering forward, it seems, is not limited to our parents and grandparents or however many generations of ancestors we can name or not name, nor is it limited to connecting these memories to our children, as important as that may be. This web of existence that we are all a part of is wider and more intricately and inclusively designed than any family tree. For as surely as our DNA might dictate the color of our eyes, the people who have influenced us by their words or wisdom or living example, these too are our ancestors. And likewise, looking forward, the people we have known and touched with our own lives will inherit some impact from our time on this earth too. So remembering forward is about recalling our connection to all others, all people and all beings, and the earth itself. I have a favorite spot on the eastern shore of Lake Michigan. Maybe some of you have been there too. Sleeping Bear Dunes is a beautiful national lakeshore of fine, soft sand rolling down to the shoreline in enormous dunes, mostly roped off and protected from the erosion caused by human traffic. But one of the dunes, a dramatically steep and wide one that drops directly down to the shores of Lake Michigan, is open to visitors. People flock to the park just to experience the exhilaration of jumping over the precipice at the top of this dune and leaping down its sandy incline. You feel like a superhero because it is so steep that each step you take, you drop 10 feet down. And your every landing is cushioned by the shifting sand. It is almost like flying in a series of short flights all the way down the hill. Once at the bottom, however, which you reach in all of about 5 minutes, you turn around and realize that the only way back is up. And the only way up is to do what you now notice all these others on the hill are doing. Why did you not notice this before? Climbing laboriously with hands and feet, both each step of 18 inches, maybe gaining you 3 to 6 inches at most as your foot slips down in the loose sand and sometimes feels like you have not moved at all. Your progress is so slow that you cannot feel intimately connected to the hill and to the sun-warmed sand. When visiting the park a few years ago, I was about halfway up the dune after climbing almost half an hour, and by a small trick of imagination, I suddenly felt like I was not just climbing a hill anymore. Arms stretched high and wide and hands plunged into that warm, deep sand, I was hugging the earth. I was holding her in the small circle of my arms, physically embracing the whole vast and spinning planet. Not like Atlas holding it up with some supernatural strength, but hugging it, embracing it in a simple, natural act of human love that was as much about remembering an ancient relationship as it was about the new awareness awakened on that day. Remember the earth whose skin you are, the poet continues. Red earth, black earth, yellow earth, white earth, brown earth, we are earth. Remember the plants, trees, animal life, who all have their tribes, their families, their histories too. Talk to them, listen to them. They are alive poems. Remember the wind, remember her voice. She knows the origin of this universe. Remember that you are all people, and all people are you. Here today, gathered in this embracing circle of community, we are accompanying one another in the sacred act of remembering. Remembering the ones we have come from, remembering the loved ones who have died before us, remembering the earth we belong to. Who are you remembering today? What connections in the great web of being and of time are awakened in your memory? And how and with whom might you share their healing power? Carrying them with you into the circle of this community and into a renewed solidarity with the larger circle of all creatures and all time. As we pause now for a moment of silent remembering, let your ears fill with the breathing of those you are connected to. Listen, listen to the ancestors' breath, to the hum of the child's dream, to the dead who live on in us and among us, remembering forward. We'll pause now for a moment of silent listening. Let us remember the dead. Remember the living. Remember the dreams of those yet to come. Remember the earth and all her children. So may we learn to live in this world together. Blessed be and amen.